time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan joins us. Hello, Eric.
Hello, Richard. How are you?
Wonderful, thank you. How was your Tuesday?
I told Carrie in response to the same question, forgettable, but indeed, it was not forgettable. It was not forgettable. And that has nothing to do with the fact that it's also Election Day, which we'll see how that turns out as well.
Yes.
It's certainly been a day. As my day began, I found myself wondering why anyone would seek higher office in any form of government, and wondering why anybody thinks that they themselves can work herd, make herd a room full of powerful personalities into any sort of agreements or anything like that. I've wondered that in the times past. I have many friends who are in politics, and I've toyed with the idea, but the hubris involved in it is like, wow, you okay? Either that or naivete. I don't know.
It does take a certain personality type to believe that you can get all these people to march in the same line at the same time.
Yeah, I think the more idealistic is that, you know, you think that you can bring people together, you know, and I think that it's incredible in a time of increased ability to communicate on any level from 140 characters, but that's now in question, isn't it, to, you know, full-length novels, etc., that we have just absolutely lost the ability to actually reach out and touch someone. Anyway, but the best way, folks, the best way to do any of this, and this is not just my advice, but actually the advice of anyone who is delivering screeds against the imminent death of democracy and the question of how can you reach out? Well, the best way is to reach out not with screaming diatribes on social media, but are indeed around tables with family and friends and talk. It is in that spirit that I do this segment, and so many of us are, you know, sort of believe that, you know, around the table, perhaps with a bit of social lubricant, better things can come of it than simply screaming into microphones and at cameras. So just food for thought, everybody, that the best way to perhaps change minds and shift ideas is to chat as opposed to scream. And so we are in November, you may have noticed. So we need to get through basically the entire Southern Hemisphere before Christmas, which is not a problem. We can handle this. So we're going to start in on South America today. South America obviously has been in my, you know, a couple decades in the wine business, definitely the hot place. Just prior to my getting into it, et cetera, you could argue that Australia was maybe the place in the Southern Hemisphere, but it really kind of burned itself out very quickly and actually has a history of doing so, which we'll talk about. But South America has had staying power, which is incredible because it's actually gone. I mean, it's had, you know, vines since the mid-1500s. Indeed, vines thought to be, you know, brought basically clippings from the vines that Cortez brought. You know, they lay claim to the fact that real, honest to God, conquistadors brought their first clippings, which in retrospect maybe is not something to brag about, but is indeed historically true, so we shall cling to it. It has gone through ups and downs, even though they, you know, because they were under Spanish rule early in their days, Chile especially, which we're going to be talking about today. Spain, even though they were starting to grow wine here in these Spanish colonies, Spain needed the money so much that they forced them to buy Spanish wine anyway, things like that. So it's kind of funny. But as I said, the entire continent of South America is second only to Europe in terms of wine production in the world, right? So not North America, but South America, which surprises a lot of people. obviously, as I sort of mentioned, the conquistadors, but of course, more than them, home to massive amounts of European immigrants. And as I mentioned, the first vinifera planted in the 1500s. Up until the mid-90s, even into the 2000s, most of the wine that was made was drunk in the country of origin, whichever country that be. And each country does have its own wine traditions. Some are better than others, and we'll get into some of those as well. But the only serious export, which started in Chile, which is where we're going to sort of head soon, as I mentioned, only started very recently, within the past 30 years. So, like I said, speaking of Chile, like when we were talking about California on in the United States, Chile encompasses about 2/3 of the western coast of South America, and it basically encompasses all the worthwhile vine growing area. So we don't talk necessarily about Ecuador, Peru, etc. So we're not even really talking about northern Chile. We're really only starting kind of down, say, about a third of the way down north of Santiago, but a third of the way down, and then definitely continuing down even into the Andes area. Most of the bulk of the wine production that we're going to talk about right now is, you know, north and south of central Chile in the Santiago region. Excuse me. And similar to California, again, it's just an incredible breadth of land, of terroir, of different rock types, of different climate, microclimates. The varieties that are being grown right now really sort of speak to that. Most of the area that we're going to concern ourselves with is essentially considered that classic Mediterranean climate, right? So when you're in the areas more north of Santiago, and it's a little bit more desert area up there. Oh, I should mention, by the way, one of the things about Chile that is great is that they don't have any phylloxera, like, to this day. So there are really old vines that never had to deal with that. And a lot of it is that sort of desert climate, especially up there. And also just the fact that they were very isolated. But it's kind of cool. They have all these very old school areas where you can go and find super old vines. And you do see more extreme plantings, certainly in areas. But just to the north of Santiago, you start to see an area where you're getting what I would describe as desert Burgundy. You have cool, very 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 cool. So you have what's coming up from the south is what's called the Humboldt Current, and it indeed comes up all the way to California. But it is the sort of main cooling mechanism that brings into all these. If you think about the Chile, think about all these valleys running in off of the Pacific Ocean, and then you have three zones. If you can sort of imagine a cross section of the coast, you have the coast, and then you have this little mountain area, and then you have a deep valley after that where some rain is dumped, and so you have this wonderful sort of area where you can get Sauvignon Blanc. And then you start to get Chardonnay and Pinot Noir and Syrah. Syrah is often thought of as, you know, the southern French grape, but the best Syrahs in the world are actually all coming from cooler climates than you'd imagine. So you see this area that is, again, sort of this desert Burgundy, and it's really wonderful. Then when you get down to Santiago, and actually below Santiago into some of these valleys there, that's where you start to see what Chile is most known for, which is more Bordeaux varietals, your Cabernet Sauvignon, your Merlot, and of course the famed-ish Carmenere, which is indeed, it's a European grape and was planted heavily in the Medoc, but really didn't take hold, but was brought over to Chile and has been sort of the signature grape, even though a lot of folks find it very sort of green bell peppery, and you either like it or you don't in general, though there's a lot having to do with sort of how it's grown, and sometimes you can get away with that, but it's, yeah. And then as you go down again, you have these wonderful Bordelaise varieties. That's really where they're at. How am I on time? I'm sure I'm running out.
About a minute and a half.
Very good. So as I said, so that's where you're at. And then, as I said, you're the only other area that's really starting to be explored is this area into the Andes, which is sort of co-administrated by Argentina and Chile. But there are these wonderful, very hard to get to valleys that grow some really extraordinarily cool vines. And because of this serious foreign investment and voracious young winemakers, both that either have investment or just don't care, you're finding some really, really cool stuff out of there. The grape to check out, by the way, from here, besides Carmenere, is called País. That is the one that apparently, in theory, was brought over from the Canary Islands, made its way from Peru and all the way into the rest of South America. And Chile claims to have the, you know, very sort of original rootstock. It's an interesting grape. We occasionally, I don't think we have any now because it's tough to get, but very often we will have examples of it, and it's kind of cool to check out just because of its old schoolness. Next week we'll hit Argentina, etc., and I wish you all well, and no matter what happens tonight, remember, the best way to get around it and to change people's minds, talking around a table.
Well said, my friend. We'll see you next week.
Cheers.
Eric Mann, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street, downtown Bangor, message in the bottle every Tuesday afternoon.